Accession number 12941, Wally Binch, Reel 2.
Mr. Binch, Reel 2. We're talking about your time at the Dolphin Street School from late January to late April 1941. How did this start you off on your training? You know, what exact training did they
well,
put you through?
As I say, the first things I remember is fire pickets. It seemed to be endless fire pickets in these rooms, and I learned about suppers of cocoa and cheese and then learned about Lance. There seemed to be one or two Lance Corporals there, ordering us about and marching us about.
Did you do much drill?
We did, yes, marching about, just drill. But I can't recall any arms there, not at the moment. Yeah.
Did you? What did you think of drill? Foot drill.
Well, it was explained to me the reason why we've got to have it, because it was all down to discipline. I rather took to it. I took to it quite easily, actually. The only thing I found out, that when it was my turn, because they gave us all in turn to be in command of a section or something, to shout the orders out, that my voice wouldn't carry as far as I wanted it to, you know. It wasn't strong enough, and as soon as I started to shout too much, I got a sore throat. But,
what about fitness work to get you fit? Did you have regular PT while you were there?
Yes, we had plenty of PT, but being young lads, of course, it didn't seem to bother us at all at that time.
Did you go on route marches?
We did not very much, because I can't seem to recall any route marches around that time. I can recall route marches later, but not around there, no.
So mainly it seems to have been drill. And what were these fire pickets? What exactly did that entail?
It merely entailed just sitting in the room, going out, walking around for so much time, and being just generally on duty in case of air raids and things like that. So that's what it really was. It wasn't to do anything else but be there. Yeah, I do remember that one of the members of Dolphy Street Schools is we had injections, the first time in my life I could remember being injected. And we went out the same night, and I remember going to the toilets opposite the Midland Station on Arkwright Street, and I had to go to the toilet to do a number one. I got my overcoat off, but I couldn't for the life of me get it back on again. And I got a stiff arm, and that was the first time I'd ever been injected. And
had your arm swollen up as well?
Yes, oh yes, swollen up and couldn't move it, sort of thing, yeah. And I was with a fellow called Wally Preston, I recall him very well, yeah.
What were the fellow members, you know, of this young soldiers, how did you fit in? Were they from the same sort of background as yourself?
Somewhere. I mean, Spike Gamble was, he was a Radford lad. Vic Newham, who I hope you might meet later, he came from Arnold. He was a very smart lad. For the first time in my life, I heard some accents from people around Derbyshire and those sort of areas, and I realised that there were more people than those in Nottingham. Yeah, and it was starting to broaden my education a bit.
Had you made any particular friends early on?
Solely with Wally Preston, actually. He was the guy that was with me that night, and him and I became buddies there, and he's still alive, but he won't come to reunions.
What made you pal up with him so much?
His personality. He wore glasses, and he'd always got a smile and a joke for everything. He could make a gag out of anything that happened. And when I met him about 45 years later, he was still the same sort of person. Yeah.
And, I mean, it sounds like, but was there any bullying within the unit? I mean, were there any tough guy types, or
not at Dolphin Street Schools? No, not at there.
How about your NCOs? How did you get on with them?
Well, the only people I can remember there is I've got very good recollections of Dolphin Street Schools. It was the Lance Corporals. You know, they were our immediate superiors, and they did sort of pull us through it quite a bit. Yeah, made us realise that they were the bosses. and we were the...
Did they treat you fairly?
I'd say they're a little bit harsh.
In what way?
Those first people. Always shouting at us and making us do this, that and t'other, and the slightest thing wrong. Yeah, yeah. Seemed to be quite harsh to us.
And what about you? So you didn't see higher ranks? You didn't no impressions of the officers, for instance?
No. There, I've got no... I can't recall any officers at all from that period.
What about kit inspections and learning to put your bull, if you like?
Yes, yes, yes. That's where we started to learn how to put your, how to set your kit up for kit inspections, and if you lost anything, well, it's your job to find it before the kit inspection.
How did you set it up? Do you remember now?
Smartly, that's all I can say. We folded the greatcoat. I remember we folded the greatcoat and the pack. Rather vague, to be honest, yeah. And the housewife had to be shown, the fork, knife and spoon, all that sort of thing. Nestings.
Yeah. Was there any stealing of kit or anything else?
There was some stealing, yes. Here and there. But there's no big epidemics of stealing, yeah. Just odd things missing here and there. You've got to keep your eye on things, yeah.
Was it mainly kit that would go, or would it be personal or money? Or
No, just odd bits of kit, you know. Just in case kit inspection was the next day, yeah.
Now, did you take your ukulele to war immediately, so to speak? I mean, you've been an entertainer. Did you take it with you when you went into the army?
Yeah. Well, I had a thought about that. The ute was a big part of my army life, but it seemed to feature more when I joined the 2nd, 5th Battalion later on than it did with the 70th, with the boys' battalion sort of thing. So I probably would have had it with me, because I always carried the thing with me, always had it with me. But I didn't seem to... I can't recall playing this a lot in the 70th. As far as I know, we were busy training, and it didn't seem to fit in that period of our life.
Now, the next thing was you went from Dolphin Street to Bulwell Hall on... you've got the date here, April 20th, 1941.
That's right. That was about my first route march. We marched from Nottingham to Bulwell, about 8 miles. It was my first taste of a real route march. So when you say, did we do route marches before? I don't think we really did, only to the dining hall and just round and about. And that was the first time that I thought, crikey, when's it going to end, this march? And we were marching to Bulwell Hall. Bulwell Hall was a real big place, and it's not there anymore, and in big grounds. And the first impression was that downstairs part was a sort of a naffy area, and there was a grand piano there, and the fellow that used to play it was called Georgie. He was the toilet waller, the toilet attendant, and he played one tune, In the Moon, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and that was it, out of tune usually. And upstairs there were the where we washed and I'm looking for the word for it. Ablutions. It's the first time I'd heard that word in my life, ablutions. And I was horrified to find out we're expected to wash in that in cold water. I don't think I shaved a lot up to there. But gradually, of course, I did start and shave more and more. But usually it was in cold water, so not very good about shaving. We were on Sunday afternoons, I remember, that the grounds were open, and the wives and girlfriends used to come in and visit us. And we used to sit around there, and it was quite nice. We did quite a lot of field training there, map references, learning about map references, marching about the countryside, and mock battles, that sort of thing.
What would a typical mock battle be like? I mean, how realistic was it?
Not too realistic there, because we didn't have any... there were no blanks or anything at that stage with the 70th at Bulwell. It was just, laying down on the command and adopting the prone position and firing or pretending to fire, that sort of thing. And learning to recognise bushy-topped trees at so many thousand yards. We also were trained on firing at aircraft, learning to fire 70 degrees in front of the aircraft.
And I want to come on to, because apparently you did some weapons training there. That's where you started your weapons training, from the notes you've given me.
Yes.
You didn't use Lee Enfields at first, did you?
No, we had these rifles. I wasn't sure whether they were Rosses or Springfields or something of that name. They seemed to have a round sight at the end of the barrel. So somebody may identify that as a Ross. I have the name Canadian Ross in my mind. It's there.
There was such a rifle.
There was such a rifle, so it may have been those then, yeah. And
how did they go about training you? I mean, I presume you hadn't fired a gun before you went in the army?
No, I never fired.
So taking you as someone right from scratch, how did they take you through it?
I do recall at one time we fired, when it came to the actual firing, I think, first of all, we fired 2-2s at targets, and then what was it now? I was an average shot, I wasn't a brilliant shot, and let me see, it was a Bull 50, a Magpie. Oh, I'm trying to go back 50 years, it's a bit of a job, this.
And what about when you came to go up onto the real thing, the Rosses or whatever they were? What did they tell you you had to do?
Well, we had to regarding firing, yes, squeeze. We had to squeeze the trigger, not jerk it, and be prepared for the kickback in the shoulder, which. Now, I'm just trying to think now whether, I can't recall whether we fired there or we fired later at other ranges. I can recall the jolt of a rifle when we did fire.
Did it surprise you at first?
Oh, yes. Yes. Talking about the kick like a mule, yes. In fact, it hurt your shoulder quite a bit, I thought. Yes, it really did. Yeah.
Now, you say you weren't a special shot in any way.
No.
What do you think you needed to have been better? I mean, what would you have needed to be a better shot, do you think? What was it you were lacking?
Well, I did my best to get that target in the centre there. At the range we were, it's quite difficult to actually get the target smack in the centre and pull the trigger while you're still holding your breath and squeezing it. I did my best, but it wasn't good enough.
It's steadiness of
I would say so, yes, yes.
Not eyesight. Your eyesight was all right.
My eyesight, as far as I know, yes.
Did you
wear
glasses then?
No, I didn't wear glasses, no, not for many, many years, no. So, I suppose I was an average shot, just about.
What about maintaining your rifle? Did they teach you how to maintain a rifle?
Well, after firing range, they would get buckets of scalding hot water and issue us all with 4x2s. And we had a pull-through, of course, and we would team the water down the barrel and then pull it through about half a dozen times. And then we would line up for inspection, and they would come around, the inspectors, and as everybody else did, we would have to put our thumb at the bottom of the barrel while they checked the cleanliness of the barrel. Yeah. All I remember that now is the queer smell of cordite and the queer smell when it was pulled through, yeah.
Now, what about other weapons? While you were there, did you do any bayonet training?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, we had the sacks hanging up on strings and going at them and just running and charging and putting the bayonets in. And we were taught how to run at the high port. He's got a job, think of these names. Highport, and then Charlie's like that, yeah. Thrust in and out, and out again, and Highport again, and on again, yeah. It all seemed the game, that did.
Did they get it? I mean, there'd been trouble in the First World War about the sort of making people shout and scream as they were doing it. Did they still do that?
Yes, we did, yeah. Oh, yes, we did all the...
did you object to it, or did you enjoy it?
No, I didn't. Oh, no, no. I thought it was all part of being a soldier, yeah. Yes, all part of it.
Now, that's actually running with a bayonet and putting it in and twist and the rest of it. Did they actually teach you bayonet fighting, which is different, things like bringing the butt through?
The hollow through, yes.
But I mean, actual fighting hand to hand with rifle and bayonet. Did they do any of that?
All I remember is, as you say, it was a thrust in and then out, and then I can remember we were taught to swing the butt as well. But that's as far as it went. We did do some there were teams up, put us in teams, and we would sort of go through the motions. But but that's as far as it could go. Yeah, yes. And just butting in there, I was enjoying life there because it was at Bulwell Hall that my mother sent my birth certificate in to say that he's 17 and a half, he shouldn't be in the army. And so on parade one morning, Private Binch, yes. Do you wish to leave the army? No, sir. Right. Step back in the ranks, and that was the end of it. But my mother tried.
You had no thoughts of getting out. You were still happy.
No, I wanted to stay in, yeah, yeah.
Even though you'd had a pretty good life outside the army with, you know, with the girlfriend, with playing the clubs,
yes.
Decent
money.
Well,
I still had the girlfriend, and now I have the army as well. Yes.
Now, what about other weapons? Did you get the Bren? Taught in the Bren? Or you get,
stage, I think we had we were being taught things about the Lewis gun, of all things, you know, and stoppages, and it seemed to be
with the drum. You mean
with the drum? Yeah, yes, yes, also it seemed. Can't remember a lot about it, but I remember thinking, well, this is what they use in airplanes, you know, and that was on a tripod, and we would do that.
Would you actually fire it?
Can't honestly say that. I can remember firing the Lewis. No, can't really. I'd have to. No.
But you didn't see the Bren, as far as you know, there.
Not as far as I know.
What about any of the submachine guns, Thompson, Sten, any of them? I don't think the Sten was out. Yeah, but
I do remember also seeing Thompson's submachine gun, also with a round drum on as well. Not the long one, which I was issued with later, in later years. Yes, we had that.
But you saw it rather than were trained in it.
Well, we were taught about it as well. We had lessons on it, just like we had lessons on the Lewis gun.
Now, what about hand grenades? Mills bombs, I presume, but possibly others.
Yeah,
did you get introduced to them while you were at Bulwell?
Vic Newham will tell you. He'll remember. He definitely will remember. Now, I think. I can't say a definite yes on that. I think we must have been, yeah, because we were taught practically everything there, field camp and all that. Yeah.
And what did you think of the Mills bombs?
Well, to me, it was just something that they, from the last World War, and it was just, what did I think of the Mills bombs? That's a funny question. Yeah.
Did they make you nervous at first?
No, I've got no recollections of that sort of thing, actually. Yeah.
Now, after a while, you're not sure quite how long, although it's supposed to be a week, but it could be anything, really. You went on a cadre course to Bestwood Lodge. Could you tell me about that? What exactly was it, and why were you sent on it?
Yeah. Well, I understand that this cadre course was for potential officers. The people that I recall that were on it was Vic Newham, who was a very smart lad, myself, a fella called Ron Kirby, who later turned out to be a bit of a tough guy, Neville Wildgus, who later was made up to a captain and was suffered some horrendous wounds, Ken Allen, who later became a lieutenant colonel, and myself. And that's all I recall of that.
Ginger Martin, I think you mentioned.
Oh,
as well.
Ginger Martin, yes, that's right. Yes, so he was killed. He's one of our very first casualties in North Africa. Yes, Ginger Martin, certainly to mind. And on this casualty course, we went along to Bestwood Lodge,
which is where
which is at Bestwood near Nottingham, quite near Nottingham, yes. And there I met for the first time a fellow called Sergeant Plowright, who apparently had been one of the youngest sergeants in the British Army. He was only then about 18, and he was teaching us, a big tall fellow with buck teeth and a great personality. And he was teaching us all he was an instructor in one of the classes.
Also, how many people were there on the course? I mean, you've told me some of the ones you remember, but how many in all would be on this cadre course?
I don't think there were too many more than that.
So you're talking five or six of you, really?
If I think back to the classroom, possibly about a dozen, yes. I think there might have been a dozen, yeah. And they would teach us this, that and t'other about...
What sort of thing were they teaching you, then?
Field craft, map references.
Is this where you did the business of taking turns to do drill, or had you already been doing that before?
We'd already been doing a bit of that before, but I think we also did some of that there as well. Yeah. In other words, teaching us to be junior NCOs, I suppose, and assessing us for what we could do. I volunteered for that or was just sent on it, I don't recall.
And what were they looking for, do you reckon, in there?
Well, potential leaders, you know, that's what we're looking for, yeah, definitely. And I did my best, and I didn't know, I don't think I knew at the time it was an officer's course. I thought it was just a course to see, looking for future NCOs, and I was full of enthusiasm for the Army at that time. I thought, this is it, I'm on my way, sort of thing. So I did my best there, and I met Phil Plowright, who incidentally was a pianist, and of course he soon learned that I'd got my ukulele, so I'd obviously taken it with me on the course, must have done, that proves that. And at night time, after the lessons, we used to go down to a local pub called The Spot at Arnold, and we'd have a sing-song. It was also there that I had my first fight in the Army. There was a fellow there called Ron Kirby, who I found out later was a real tough guy, and him and I were sort of acting as though we were kids at school. I'll see you after school then, and so we had a fight, and
what caused the trouble?
Nearly killed me.
What caused the trouble?
I don't know. It was probably just... I really can't remember what caused it. I know that after it, he nearly choked me to death, and after it, we shook hands, and we were the best of friends.
He didn't beat you up too badly then?
No, actually...
I mean, how badly... I mean, you got a thrashing, but I mean, how bad did he... He didn't go too far then?
Well, if I had to bang on the ground saying, I give in, I think he would have kept on until he exterminated me. He got me around the throat, and my throat was sore for days afterwards. And that was the first scrap that I was in. I learnt later that this fella, in later life, in the army, wherever he went, he was trouble, and one person he picked up and threw him to a plate glass window. Yeah. Anyway, after the war, I'd be getting in touch with him, and the first thing he said when I spoke to him on the phone, it wasn't true, Wally, everything they said about me. You know? He was most concerned.
But anyway, after the fight, you were all right with him?
We were good friends.
He didn't bully you then? It wasn't a matter of bullying?
No, it wasn't the case of that. It was a straightforward two fellas. One thought, I'm better than you, sort of thing, and we fell out over some little thing, but shook hands afterwards, and great, no problem. Yeah, I didn't do any good out of that cadre course, because when I got back to the unit, apparently the CO had found my rifle in a rusty and filthy condition, and I was put upon the charge, and I got 7 days CB instead of a stripe. So I then went the other way.
How come it was rusty? And I think, had you not been looking after it, or was it?
Well,
or said someone
swapped? I thought I'd been done up. You know, I couldn't believe it, and I was really really upset about it. And
what do you mean done up?
Well, I thought somebody had possibly, in jealousy, while I was on the course, had done something to my rifle. When I look back, I think to myself, well, obviously I hadn't got my rifle with me, and I don't know why. And I think to myself, well, it was quite easy for somebody to do something to it. You know?
So as far as you were concerned, you had been maintaining your rifle properly?
Yes, that's right, yes. Yes.
Now, what is, I mean, CB, what was that? Confined to barracks?
Well,
what would
confined
you have to
do? Barracks, yes. Obviously, you weren't allowed to leave the place. And what it really meant was that after you'd done your day's work, training, you then had to report to the cookhouse or something like that. And it was either washing up greasy dishes or peeling spuds or working for in the kitchen, usually. Or some menial task. Yeah, for 7 days.
Now,
and reporting early in the morning to the police sergeants, etc. Yes.
Now, at the end of May, you think, I mean, this is all to be checked, and you'll probably feed the thing. Around May the 30th, you got the battalion moved? Or
Yes, we moved on. And as far as I know, we moved to a place called Alston Ferry.
Where's that?
That's in Links, in Lincolnshire. And my main recollections of that place is that there was a big square, and they used to drill us there, and the ladies of the village would stand there with their arms folded saying, "Oh, those poor lads," because the sergeants were shouting at us, you know, "Get those arms up, you dozy buggers," you know, and the women were saying, "Oh, leave the lads alone." And the only other recollection I have of that place is that, you know, we slept in bunks, and I met a fellow called Frank Dutton, who was a trumpeter, and he taught me to play the trumpet, a few scales anyway. And Frank was a fellow from Ilkeston, and he was in the a carnival band there called the Ilston Middies. I've often tried to find Frank Dutton since then. I've asked about the Ilston Middies carnival band. People remember it, but that's all they can do, and I've never seen Frank since.
But you still were not really playing your ukulele like you had done. It wasn't a big feature of your life at the time. You weren't being a sort of unpaid entertainer.
No, that's right, yes. It was just plunking away here and there and perhaps going out, having a drink and taking the ute with us. But it didn't seem to be registering like it did seem to be later on. When I joined the second fifth.
Were you still playing the same stuff? Was it still George Formby mainly?
Yes, it was. Yeah, nearly always George Formby. I didn't know there was any other songs but George Formby for the ukulele.
Were you doing them still at this point straight? In other words, if you sang one, were you just sing the words as sung by George Formby? Or had you started at all writing your own parodies?
No, I hadn't started at all. That didn't start until I met Eddie Hallett. Yeah, I just didn't seem to realise you could make different words up. Although I had altered one or two little George Formby couplets in the songs to make them more topical. You know, if there was something that
so happened
you
just started tinkering.
Yeah, just started tinkering with the words a little. Yes.